welcome to episode 37 of Upshift, Spellcasting. Upshift is the No Direction Network's Essence 20 podcast, where every 2 weeks we give you an edge on Essence 20. I'm Ryan Costello, one of the designers of the Essence 20 system, and an author on the G.I. Joe, Transformers, and My Little Pony role-playing game Core Rulebooks, as well as over a dozen other Essence 20 projects from Renegade Game Studios. Before we begin, although I have worked on Essence 20 for Renegade Game Studios, Upshift is not affiliated with Renegade Game Studios, and this is not an official Essence 20 podcast. Today we're tackling spellcasting. It is one of the Essence 20's magic systems. And when I say one of, there are, I believe at this point, only two magic systems for Essence 20. There is spellcasting, which is from the My Little Pony role-playing game Core Rulebooks. And then there is sorcery, which I believe was introduced in Finster's Finster's Monstermatic cookbook for the Power Rangers line. And the difference is that in My Little Pony, you have a unique skill called spellcasting, which is where the system gets its name, versus in Power Rangers, certain abilities, certain powers are called out as sorcery, which is where that system gets its name. Other than sharing a magic theme, the two systems are entirely different. So I'm going to be looking at the spellcasting system today, its history, its mechanics, and its implementation, and just share my thoughts on it as the designer of that system. Because as I've talked about in the past, as we were wrapping up the G.I. Joe role-playing game Core Rulebook, I was asked what I wanted to work on next, and I really strongly said I wanted to work on My Little Pony. First of all, because I knew the setting well, and having a setting expert on a book is it's essential. It is more than just an asset. It is something that I don't think any source book should go without somebody that absolutely inside and out knows the setting. And I do feel like that was me for My Little Pony. I know My Little Pony almost as well as I know G.I. Joe, or at least to the Friendship is Magic era. So generation 4 of My Little Pony, which is what our license was, which worked out for me. And so I knew the setting, but the other thing is that during the design and development of the G.I. Joe core rulebook, I noticed that we had a lot of options that give upshifts, naturally, and there's fewer just rules that bake in downshifts. There's the alternate effects of weapons, and other than that, it's a couple of conditions that will give a downshift, but for the most part, downshifts are up to GMs to administer. Which, fine, it makes sense, and it works for most of those systems, but it did get me thinking, what could we do to add more downshift into maybe even the player side of Essence 20? And in asking myself that, I actually came up with what I thought was a pretty clever magic system. And so My Little Pony was the first opportunity I had to implement that. And so I asked and was brought onto the My Little Pony core rulebook team. There was just one caveat. Essence 20 was designed to be a narrative, story-driven role-playing system, and the fear was that G.I. Joe was the most mechanically dense of the first three core rulebooks that were presented. Now, we've talked about, mostly in the Field Guide episode, how a lot of what was being described as, like, mechanical density was actually rules explanation that it ends up when the book started coming out, and people were questioning how to play Power Rangers, but people were going to G.I. Joe to understand how to play Power Rangers. A lot of that weight was lifted and the G.I. Joe team was kind of vindicated in that way. But at the time that we were writing the My Little Pony core rulebook, Power Rangers had not come out yet. And so there was still this air of, like, careful with those G.I. Joe designers. They are a little bit crunchier than the rest of them. And My Little Pony was supposed to be the least crunchy of all of the core rulebooks. Like, out of that first volley of core rulebooks, My Little Pony was supposed to be lighter than Essence 20, which was already designed to be a light system, which I do believe Essence 20 turned out to be a light system. There's a couple of areas that are crunchier than I think they need to be, but overall, it's a fairly light system. It's fairly easy to run and play. And that leaves us with, I had this idea for the magic system that was inherently crunchy. And the question was, would I be able to implement this system that I had in mind on this rules-light version of the game? So I could have just scrapped it and said, all right, maybe someday we'll get some other license where our magic system works better, or maybe someday I'll be able to reflavor this system and use that use this system for that mechanic. But I will say that this mechanic really felt like magic to me, and I am a strong believer that there is a relationship between rules and theme, and which leads to the storytelling, and that you can actually get away with a crunchier system when it makes real good sense for the theme and the story you're trying to tell. And this told a great story of a spellcaster casting spells. And specifically, well, mostly specifically. All right, let me take a step back, because this is, sounds like I'm making caveats for a statement I haven't said yet. This spell system works very well for My Little Pony. Now, My Little Pony spellcasting system, like within the setting, so within the media, is nothing groundbreaking. It is very similar to what we see in a lot of other media. But what it is not similar to is how Dungeons & Dragons handles magic. Dungeons & Dragons, for whatever reason, when it was originally released, committed to Vancian magic, which is named after Jack Vance, a fantasy author who came up with this magic system where, at the beginning of the day, a spellcaster would sit down with his spell book and, like, inscribe spells onto his brain that would last about 24 hours or until he used them, and once he used them, they were gone. And it's unlike any magic system in any other setting except for Dungeons & Dragons and therefore Pathfinder and offshoots and the fiction based on those two games. But it is very gamey and is very specific, and it is not something you see in a lot of other media, including a lot of Dungeons & Dragons tie-in media. They just go with a more traditional version of magic, which is a lot like how it's presented in My Little Pony. So in My Little Pony, spellcasters can just cast spells they know. They learn these things. It's like cooking a recipe. Sometimes you don't even need the cookbook when you just know how to do it well enough. But then there are some recipes that even when you know them, you have to consult them. And then there's other times when you know the end result you need, but you don't know the recipe, and so you have to research the recipe. This is all exactly how it's done in My Little Pony when it comes to magic. But kind of like a cooking competition, since I've stumbled upon this metaphor that I think works very well. When a spellcaster is expected to cast a lot of spells in rapid succession, that's when it really starts to show the wear that magic has on the body. When you're just casting a spell every now and then just to make some tea or you know, fluff up your pillows, it's absolutely no big deal. But if you're in some kind of tea-making, pillow-fluffing competition and you have to see how many you can do in 5 minutes, then you're going to see them sweating. You're going to see them weighed down by the weight of what they're doing. And it's not even a life or death situation. It is just, if you have to cast a lot of spells, it's just like doing anything a lot of in a row. It tires you out, which is where the idea of these downshifts, these lingering downshifts, comes from. So the way the magic system works is that when you cast a spell, you use your spellcasting skill, which we'll talk about in a minute, and you downshift that spellcasting skill equal to the cost of the spell. And so simple effects, and simplicity is defined in two different ways. There's the spell's tier, and there's the cost. So simple effect will have a downshift of 1. More complex will have up to downshift of 3. I don't think we ever go above 3, although I'm not super familiar with the spells in Knights of Canterlot, which I should point out I did not work on and have only kind of skimmed and didn't even know it existed until it was announced. So I'm not going to be touching on how Knights of Canterlot has changed anything, because I don't know it well enough. Like, I don't know the surface level of it, let alone knowing the ins and outs of those spells and how they affect and how they modify the system, if at all. So just off the top of my head, I don't think a downshift ever gets above down 3. But in any case, you do this downshift and you gain upshift 1 every round until you're back up to your spellcasting stat, and then you stop getting these upshifts. So basically, if you cast just 2 really big spells in a row, you're tapped and you have to relax for a bit. Whereas if you go back and forth between the 1 downshift spells and the bigger downshift spells, the higher cost spells, then you can kind of extend just how much spellcasting you can do, but it's not going to be any major effects. It's going to be some small things here and there, or small things mixed in with big things. That becomes the rhythm of the spellcasting, or the rhythm of the scene that has spellcasting involved in it, which has inherent drama, and again, is easy to visualize how these mechanics tie into what the mechanics represent. Again, my favorite kind of mechanic. going back to the spellcasting skill, I also really liked the idea that we were adding a skill to My Little Pony, and it was going to be essence agnostic. So I could have just added a skill. Although when we were designing Essence 20 and we came up with our skill list, the intention really was that this should cover all storytelling of any system that we will ever do with Essence 20. So, or of any setting rather. So we weren't working on My Little Pony yet. We were working on the three action adventure brands, so Power Rangers, G.I. Joe, and Transformers, with an eye for the future when we would get My Little Pony, and the idea that who knew where we were going to go from there. We wanted to make sure that we covered all the bases, even if some of them you would have to stretch for your interpretation. But for the most part, we were covering everything you would want to do. And we did not want to add additional skills. One thing I could have done is replace science with spellcasting, because in My Little Pony, science is kind of spellcasting. Like it's treated in the same way. And like there are scientists in the world and they are non-magical, but the way spellcasting characters, the way magical characters approach magic is science enough that science could have covered spellcasting. We could have called it science and spellcasting. In any case, that would have been an option. That would have been a fairly basic option, which probably would have met the, like, make sure it stays simple criteria. But I liked this idea that I came up with of spellcasting being its own skill. For you see, the way that spellcasters are usually presented in My Little Pony media is that they have made a sacrifice to learn magic. And a major theme of the first few seasons of My Little Pony is that Twilight Sparkle has no social skills, that she gave up any time she could have been spending with friends at parties to instead spend time with books and learning. And so she just became a better and better spellcaster at the expense of her social skills. Likewise, you'll see a lot of other spellcasters, they'll have social awkwardness, they'll be a little more frail, it's very rare you find a very physically capable spellcaster, because they are taking a little bit of the time they could be spending on their physical self or on the social skills and just diving into books. So yeah, thematically, I really like the idea that you could be increasing at your natural rhythm in another skill, or you can give that up for spellcasting. And again, I think that it is more complicated than you might think this My Little Pony book needs, but because it makes so much sense, it's easy enough to follow, and it's very easy to get into when you realize, like, that is the story that is being told here. You are going to be weaker and more awkward physically and socially for the sake of being a better spellcaster. And the way I'm kind of avoiding smarts as though you can't do that. You could also do it with smarts. You can be a genius when it comes to spellcasting and pretty dopey when it comes to all other forms of intelligence. Now, there is one thing that I regret about spellcasting, and that is the name spellcasting. For you see, there are two elements that you need to be a spellcaster. One, you need the magical general perk, and two, you need ranks in the spellcasting skill. The problem is, the magical general perk just lets you cast spells, and the spellcasting perk doesn't let you cast spells without the magical perk, but does teach you about magic. So in retrospect, it makes a lot more sense to have flipped those so that the skill is magic and the general perk is spellcaster. But alas, it got through me, it got through development, editing, and really not even a lot of, I don't think I've ever seen anyone point this out on the forums. It's possible that other people have noticed this. I definitely, once I noticed it, it kind of shattered my impression of it and made me realize, oh, I screwed that one up. So that's on me, 100%. I made the call for those names, and I wish we can change it, but at this point we are so far along that changing it would just cause confusion. So going back to the idea that we wanted spellcasting to be simple, or we wanted My Little Pony to be simple, the reason that I argued that we could get a little crunchier with my magic was because it was entirely opt-in. You could not accidentally make a spellcaster. Even if you were a unicorn, which is naturally magical, There is nothing forcing you to put even a single rank in spellcasting, and you can just use your telekinesis and let your general purchase kind of sit there as an option that you're not exploring, which, you know, that's just part of character creation. Sometimes you get a suite of options and not all of them are useful to your build. So I liked that if you wanted to master this part of the setting that is in-world more complicated, you also had to learn a part of the rules that is more complicated. And the more you wanted to do it, the more you had to learn. So if you just wanted a spell or two, you could learn those spells and that's it. And, you know, learn how spellcasting skill works and learn those spells and that's it. But if you wanted to become a dedicated spellcaster, then you're looking at specializing in spellcasting, which means that you learn a whole bunch of spells. I didn't really talk about this, but you know a certain number of spells equal to the number of ranks you have in spellcasting. It's called mastering them. So you have the option to temporarily master spells, which is called something else. But off the top of my head, it's not coming to me. So there's learned spells and there's researched spells. So the researched ones are the ones that this is the spell we need in the immediate future. I'm going to make sure I learn how to do it. But after a day of no longer researching it, you lose access to it. Whereas the learned spells, the ones that you gain from increasing your ranks in spellcasting, those are the ones that you can constantly cast without having to do further research into them. Those are the ones you have learned. So again, there is narrative, there is storytelling tied into it. And, you know, if there is a perfect spell to solve a situation that the players don't know, the GM can either turn that into a research scene or turn up the drama by saying there's not enough time for that kind of research and they have to go into it knowing that they had the key and knowing that they have to now pick a lock, metaphorically speaking. So to learn a spell, you have to put a rank in spellcasting, which means that just based on ranks, you can master six spells, which does not sound like a lot. It is enough to get by if you are, you know, if you have a theme who achieves that theme by casting spells. Like I played an infiltrator in a G.I. Joe game, a magical infiltrator. I'll talk about this game at the end because I'm probably already raising questions. Yeah, so I played an infiltrator. So six spells would have been enough, but I chose to do a spellcasting specialization anyway. So when you specialize in spellcasting, you choose a circle, which means like the school of magic. So there's age, there's beam, there's enchantment, and there's utility. So all spells fall into one of these four categories, and it's just a matter of like making sure that it's easy to find the spell that you want based on the category, based on what it does. And then there's the tiers, which are elementary, superior, or virtuoso, which I will get back to with a fun anecdote about the development of this system later. So you get the combination. You choose the tier and you choose the circle. And you have to have mastered at least one spell in that combination, and then you suddenly master all the spells in that combination. And because you're specialized, you'll also be able to roll as specialized. So again, we're getting more complicated, but it's all voluntary. And then if you want to go even further, if you want to be an even better spellcaster, you can take the Spirit of Magic, which is the ultimate spellcasting option, and it enhances your spellcasting. It gives you magical abilities that are not related to spellcasting, and in fact, you do not have to be a spellcaster to take the role and to play a Spirit of Magic. Maybe I will even try and come up with and build a character who is a Spirit of Magic as their role without giving them spellcasting for my blog, Essential Builds. So there we go. I made the argument that we can make spellcasting a little more complicated. Everything else in the system would be more basic. We would have roles with no like focus options or no like divisions within them, except for the Spirit of Magic. All of the origins would be fairly straightforward. The influences would be straightforward. In fact, they would even have the extra step of having each one being tied to a skill. All of that was to make a simplified version of Essence 20 that just happened to have this one subsystem that was on par with something like G.I. Joe. Now, there was one change I made before presenting it to anyone, just something I thought of as a concept that just did not make the cut in here, and that was that each spell I envisioned to have variables within it. So you could cast a spell with a downshift range of 1 to 3 or whatever the range was. And the more downshifts you take, the more advantages you got. So you could do like, I'm going to cast this beam spell at one downshift for a regular effect, but if I do it at two downshifts, then maybe I'll get two damage, or maybe I'll get to do it at twice the range. So that was a concept I had that I had given up on by the time I got to the actual design of the spells, which is why you've got something like Energy Beam, which is almost exactly the same as Lancing Beam, a separate spell, except Energy Beam only has a downshift of one, Lancing Beam has a downshift of two, Lancing Beam has a range of 60 feet, whereas Energy Beam only has a range of 30 feet. So otherwise identical spells, just this one variable that separates them. And in the original system, that all would have just been Energy Beam. Sorry, in the original concept, that all would have been Energy Beam, and you would have had the chance to do one or two downshift at a range of 30 feet, or if you do two downshift, a range of up to 60 feet. That variability was broken down into multiple different spells that work the same way except for the one variable, and there's some general perks that let you then apply that those changes and basically break your spell up into multiple spells in one that just, it costs you a general perk. So again, more complexity requires more buy-in. Your general perk is your opportunity cost that gets you this new ability. So I had self-edited that out. I didn't think that that was something that this system needed. Maybe if, again, we got some kind of license that really required an elaborate spellcasting system, that's something that I might consider bringing back in. But I don't really think the system needs it. I think it's just interesting that that was an idea I had. So the idea I presented was basically completely accepted by Trivia and Elisa, the other two members of the My Little Pony design team, both of which were also Renegade employees. So they were kind of pulling double duty as authors on the book and developers and doing the later stages of the rulebook writing. But one suggestion that Trivia had was that we change elementary to standard as far as we're talking about these schools of magic. And that's when Trivia just got blasted by the amount of thought I put into some things that might seem minor innocuous, because then I was like, well, the problem with changing elementary to standard is that, one, standard is a word we use a lot, so it's tired, and it has a lot of additional meanings, which would make it harder to find if you're just searching your PDF for that rule, but also it can be confusing because there's just so many standard things, whereas elementary would be exclusive to this system and is thematically tied to the system because there's a lot of school learning in spellcasting, and elementary is a word that's associated with schools. At least where I go from, where I come from, elementary school is your grade school. It's grade 1 to 3 to 6 in Montreal and the surrounding areas. But then second of all is that if we just wanted to abbreviate spells by school, if we have standard and superior, then we've got two S's, and so we'd have to do a two-letter abbreviation, which is just not as clean. And this doesn't come up here, but just in general, I like to have a alphabetical power level synergy. So in this case, elementary are the weakest of the spells, and they also happen to be the earliest in the alphabet. Superior is the second and comes in the middle. Virtuoso, which is another word I was super proud of, is furthest in the alphabet and also strongest. So that whether we're ranking them alphabetically or by power, they all are listed in the same order. And anytime that I can get that alphabetical power synergy, I am super proud of myself. So poor Trivia casually suggests that we replace elementary with standard. And then I blasted them with just so many words and so many thoughts, and they backed off after that. And hopefully they weren't hesitant to make other changes, worried that I had put this much thought into them and would make the argument. I'm always willing to make the argument, and I'm always willing to listen to counterarguments. I just don't know if people put as much thought into some of these things as I do, which isn't, I guess it's, I'm kind of complicating myself, but I'm also, I give myself more work than I probably need to by doing these things this complicated. That is how the spellcasting system works. Now, this was originally in an episode about bringing My Little Pony options to your other settings. And people definitely would be interested in bringing spellcasting to the other settings because it completely changes the feel of that setting. If you are playing a G.I. Joe setting and spellcasting is suddenly available, it is not G.I. Joe as presented by the comics or the cartoon. It is a new mystical offshoot of G.I. Joe. The thing to remember is that these spells were written for a setting that combat is secondary to other forms of problem solving. But also, that we were actually, I was asked to keep the number of spells to a minimum for page count reasons, because if this is an optional system that only a certain number of players are going to be benefiting from, yes, it's integral to the system. Yes, it's integral to the setting, but it's not integral to every single character. And so you need to balance out the logistics of just how many pages something that only some players will benefit from should take up, which is all like standard question that you asked during the design and development of a role-playing game source book. So the combination of lowering the number of spells that were going to be presented in the core rulebook, tied to simplifying things so that you didn't have to worry about constantly casting the same spell over and over again just because, you know, it has a lesser duration. So a lot of these spells were just given straight up, it lasts the whole scene, or some of them last the whole day. And that is extremely powerful. And also, this was written specifically for this setting. And one of the spells that are common in this setting that would probably be rarer in another setting is teleportation. Ponies can just teleport left and right like it's no big deal. So if you are adapting spellcasting to another setting, you also need to have a conversation. This is between the GM and the players. Which of these spells need to have their durations changed? Which of them need to have their circle and tier changed? Now, as it happens, I did put the number of spells by tier and by circle. It's the same no matter what tier circle combination you were talking about. You got the same number of spells, which is not something that's mandatory for the system to be balanced. In fact, Dungeons & Dragons does not do that at all. But it was just something that I felt just made the most sense to me. It's really the only reason that I made sure that everything had the same ratio of spells, regardless of your tier circle combination. If you are looking at something and saying, like, teleportation should be a virtuoso spell, that is way too powerful for the level that it is, absolutely change it. Not to mention the fact that even just if you bring in the Dark Skies over Equestria, which adds a half dozen to a dozen new spells, those, I also wrote those, but I did not pay as much attention to making sure that tiers and circles all had the same amount, because it was all changeling themed, and so it had to be shape-shifting and infiltration-focused, which meant that, you know, there's only so much you can do with a beam when it comes to being a shapeshifter, for example. So, yeah, it's already been thrown off, so don't worry about moving it from one tier to another if you think that makes it more balanced, because you just do not want characters to have full access to flying, teleportation. Really, the ones that give you movement are the ones that are most likely to cause problems for your game, especially if you're running a published adventure. Like, G.I. Joe, least of all the settings, has the least assumption that a character can fly or move vertically as easily as they can horizontally. And yes, I know that the Rocketeer added that functionality right from first level, but still, it's extremely rare. Like, that is one focus out of the dozens of focuses that we have now. Whereas if it was just a spell and absolutely every character could put a rank in spellcasting, no, you need two ranks in spellcasting for Fluttery Wings, and then you get a 15-foot aerial movement for a day, like, that can throw off a campaign. So if you want to change that to a scene, that makes much more sense for a lot of campaigns. Even if, by the way that it worked in the setting, in the media, it made more sense for My Little Pony for it to last a day. So that wraps things up on the magic system for My Little Pony, the spellcasting system. I think that it fits into all of the Essence 20 settings if the theme works, because it really works as a magic system. I'm so proud of this. I've definitely put a lot more thought into this than I did for most of the things that I designed, just because, like, this was a whole system. This had to bring magic to a system that did not have magic, and that magic was not a cornerstone. It was not factored in at all to the original three settings that the game was designed most heavily to function for. Even though, yes, we knew magic would have to be something we worked on somewhere down the line. Yeah, I am very happy with it. If you are just a fan of Essence 20 or just a fan of game mechanics, I can recommend getting the My Little Pony book just to see the work that I did on the magic system, because it is one of the things I am most proud of as a designer. And I think people should check it out regardless of their feelings of My Little Pony. So now, just to spend a couple of minutes going back to that campaign that I was talking about. I am playing in a G.I. Joe-centric Energon Universe campaign that allows all Essence 20 options. So for those who are not aware, the Energon Universe is the current comic book universe that Skybound is publishing that is entirely G.I. Joe and Transformers focused. Like, they both exist equally in this universe. And so we're actually, like, we are doing things that coincide with the action in the comics, which has led some interesting, like, storytelling twists and whatnot. Like, I've never played a campaign that is tied to media that is currently being published. So just all of a sudden we end up on Cybertron, and all of a sudden Cybertron, like, a chunk of Cybertron gets blown up because that just happened to be happening in the comic. And I think had that not happened in the comic, Eric wouldn't have added that kind of thing in himself. It's interesting. Like, we are not playing the story of the comics. We are playing a story that is running parallel to the comics. And the way it's working out has led to just some absolutely unique storytelling moments, which includes, at one point, all of our characters were captured and we had to make new characters to rescue our main characters. And we were told that we can do absolutely anything. And so the first character I played, the main character that I'm playing, is Scaffold, who is a Rocketeer technician. And I love jetpacks and I love the Rocketeer focus. So even though I knew right from the beginning that I could have gone absolutely wild with my build, I wanted something pretty straightforward that I just was something that I liked. But now when I was building a character that I only needed temporarily, because Eric even said that after the rescue mission, we will all have equal access to these two characters that we're playing. So anytime a new mission starts, we get to choose mask style, which were the best agents for the job. And so, I still figured Scaffold would be my main guy, and this would be a character that I may play just the one time. And so I made Shoehorn a magic infiltrator, and I did a lot. I combined a lot of G.I. Joe options with my Little Pony magic options, and so I got to play with, like, all the magic toys in that campaign. And, you know, like, when you're designing a system, you will run scenarios through your head, you will do the math, you will play test, but it's not the same as bringing those rules into a campaign and really seeing how they test under actual, there's a term for it and it's not coming to me, but basically realistic, there's theory and then there's practical. And under the most practical experience, it was cool seeing the magic system work exactly as I expected it to. That I was scrambling to cast the right spells, that when I would cast a high cost spell, it was knowing that this might be it for a little while, but I was actually a spirit of magic was my role. And so I knew that at once or twice during this adventure, I could go Nova, cast a whole bunch of spells, including multiple spells in a single round, and then spend the role has a built-in resource. And one of the things you can do with it is spend it to regain or to reset your spell casting back up to the top. So I knew that if we absolutely needed to, I could go Nova one round and then go Nova again the next round. And it did actually happen towards the end of the adventure when we were in the boss fight and I really needed to bring the big guns. So I am speaking as a fan of this system, as a player, as a designer, and theoretically as a GM, although who knows, maybe as a GM, I would find it really frustrating that someone can just bend the rules of physics, of science, because they got a couple of spells. Well, thank you for joining me for another episode of Upshift. Before I go, I do want to remind people, we have a Patreon. If you want to support what the No Direction Network does, you can go to patreon.com/NoDirection. Give whatever amount of money you feel comfortable with. I will point out that we are not doing Patreon-specific bonuses at this point. It really is. You are helping us keep the lights on. You're helping us keep our equipment up to date. And you're helping pay for our server costs, which are the most expensive part of running the network. And also, thank you to Word Burglar for the use of Letters from Snake Eyes, Part 4. You can check out wordburglar.com for more on Word Burglar. He also has a couple of new singles out that I think are going on an album, including one about Cobra's Taylor. And it's amazing because Cobra's Taylor is so proud of himself for the uniforms that he designs for this evil organization. And there's so many deep cuts in that song that, again, like, Word Burglar's ability to create narrative with rhythm about these pop culture references, and that he's been doing it for a decade or more, and he's still constantly coming up with new ways to express these things, blows my mind. I am legitimately a huge fan of Word Burglar, not just because he raps about content that I like, because I'm not even much of a fan of rap music, but I really like what Word Burglar does. He just hits that sweet spot of a bunch of different disparate elements that should not work together, but he makes them work together. Oh, and I should give a shout out to Transformers 1. I got to see it at a preview screening, and I got the impression from, I was in a full audience, and just from being online, it seems like there was a lot of preview screenings. And then looking at the Rotten Tomatoes and all the other Metacritic scores, a lot of people love it. Fans love it, and the critics love it. Like, this is a good movie for a lot of reasons. It is well written. The character work between the relationships between Optimus Prime and Megatron are great. Bumblebee is funnier in the movie than he is in the trailer, because I think the trailer kind of overloaded a little bit on Bumblebee, whereas the jokes are spread out and a little less expected in the movie, and so that element even works. Alita One also is a well-crafted character whose place in the dynamic is really interesting. And it goes like it tells more story than I expected it to. It tells the story much better than I expected it to. It's visually interesting. It's really an impressive movie. And I would be saying that whether it was Transformers or not, but because it's Transformers and they respected so much of the lore, I loved this movie. And I was kind of crushed when I found out that it did not do great at the box office. And so if you are hesitating at all to see Transformers 1, let me tell you, this is the best Hasbro movie that's ever been released. And if, like, I desperately want this movie to succeed so that they, Hasbro and Entertainment One, I believe is their movie division, looks at it and says, oh, what if we made a G.I. Joe movie that was as respectful for the source material as this Transformers movie was? And then I get a G.I. Joe movie that I never thought possible. Like, if they made a G.I. Joe movie as good as Transformers 1, that would be up there with, like, the first Deadpool movie and Deadpool and Wolverine, which kind of tips my hand that I'm not a big fan of Deadpool 2. But yeah, like, just thinking of any of the nerdy stuff that I love getting adapted, this is up there with absolutely anything. Name anything that you want, and I will say, yes, Transformers 1 is really that good. And so if you are hesitating because you think it's a little kiddie or you think it's a little silly from the commercials, trust me, you need to see this movie. And for the sake of the entire fandom, please see it in theaters so that they see that making a good movie that is for the fans or that is, like, fan-friendly can also make them money. Weird note to end on for the My Little Pony Magic episode, but Transformers 1 only came out now, so what am I going to tell you? If I waited 2 weeks to do a Transformers 1 review, it just would not... come to think of it, I guess this episode could have been a Transformers 1 review. Well, instead, you get a Transformers 1 punch in the face at the end, because I loved this movie. I cannot wait to see it again with my kids, and I really hope that it is in theaters for a long time and makes $1 billion. Until next time, I'm Ryan Costello. This has been Upshift. Finally back in the world to continue my service. Lonzo would assure me that this was my new purpose. With a team of green shirt, highly trained specialists. Kept it to myself, told the others don't question it. Trust me, some things are better left unsaid. Except my demons that were screaming like the undead. I let them in every day. My main meditation was taking them down. My pain medication. Shanna sighed. And she knew she couldn't call me, at least until I found out what happened to Tommy. That mission was private. For now, the objective was stopping the...